The Compliance Perspectives podcast is sponsored by Onspring, a no-code GRC software for compliance pros like you. Visit onspring.com to learn more. Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Philadelphia is Elena Sichenko. Elena is adjunct professor at the Department of Management at the University of Bologna, who's currently a Fulbright scholar studying at the Wharton School of Business. Elena, thanks for joining us. Today, as Elena knows, and to let all of you know, we're going to be talking about the EU Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. Elena, first, can you tell folks what are the main provisions of the directive?
First of all, hi all, and thanks a lot for the invitation. It's a great pleasure for me to speak to you all. Well, it's quite difficult, you know, to describe in a couple of words what is the directive about, because it is, together with the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, is around 400 pages, but I will try to do that. So actually, first of all, it broadened significantly the scope of companies which are supposed to do sustainability reporting. Then it added much more specific information on what should be reported and how. And finally, it added the need to have external assurance of your materiality assessment. So this is the most briefest version possible.
Well, I can see how that it's a good brief description, but there's a lot of implications to it. Now, first, what types of companies are affected by the directive? Is it all sizes or above a certain threshold?
This directive, it brought changes into the non-financial reporting directive, which was adopted in 2014. And the previous version, so since 2014, it covered only large listed companies, banks and insurance companies with more than 500 employees. And also back then, there was no external assurance. However, if we will open the requirements of the new directive, now it covers all listed companies except for micro enterprises. So small and medium enterprises are also covered. And also it covers companies, so non-EU companies, whose ultimate parent company is outside the EU, but they have a significant presence in the EU. So as you see, they have enumerated much more types of enterprises within the new version of the directive.
Yeah, it sounds like it expanded things greatly. So yeah. What exactly are the reporting requirements?
In the directive itself, they have written a lot of what is supposed to be developed further in the European reporting standards. The directive came into force in January 2023, so a year ago, and in June they have adopted the European reporting standards, sustainability reporting standards. However, these reporting standards apply only for large companies, and they are supposed to develop other reporting standards for small and medium enterprises this summer. And also it is said, at least at the side of the European Union, that also a different set of reporting standards would be reporting for non-EU companies which have a presence in the European Union. So these reporting standards are divided into 12 blocks, and they really have much to do with the GRI. Because actually, as it is mentioned in the directive itself and in the European reporting standards, they have observed the approach of the GRI to reporting. So those who have worked with GRI will find a lot of common things. And also it's interesting that for the first time, I think, in the legal documents, you see a lot of time the term ESG is mentioned. If before it was a concept which was developed by the business ethics, it was developed by investors, now it is a legal term. So there are 12 blocks, and they are divided into E, S, and G. So if we will speak about E, it is disclosure on climate change, on pollution, on water and marine resources, biodiversity and ecosystems, and finally, resource use and circular economy. So this is about the E part. Then there is quite a huge S part. S part is divided into own workforce, workers in the value chain and affected communities, and finally consumers and end users. And the G part is about business conduct in general. The second part of the European Sustainability Reporting Standards is about general disclosures. And this part is the only mandatory part for the covered companies. And here, what is important, it describes what is materiality assessment, and it takes the point of double materiality. So sustainability and financial materiality should be, assessment should be undertaken by a covered enterprise. And this part, so only the way how the companies ensures this materiality assessment should be considered by the external expert. So actually it's up for the company then, as in GRI, to choose what are the particular standards of reporting they are going to follow then. So if you consider that the own workforce or workers in the value chain are a material topic for you, then you follow the standard S1 or standard S2 for further reporting.
That's really interesting to hear. I have to admit, though, I'm not familiar with the acronym GRI.
These are the reporting standards which were adopted quite a few years ago, and they are widely used in, well, at least by European companies.
Hmm.
It's Global Reporting Index, I guess.
Great, so thank you. Uh-huh. It's, the more time I spend in compliance, the more I find out I don't yet know.
me too.
Now, whenever there are reporting requirements, there is always a temptation to cheat. We've all seen reports of greenwashing for years now. What are some of the areas most likely to be subject to false reporting?
I think that the key problem here is not really cheating, but presenting the information in a little bit overestimated way, or in a too vague way, or not providing the necessary details. Very often the company, when they are supposed to speak about, well, let's say social issues, for example, the freedom of association or the right to strike, they say, we're respecting the right of our workers to organize. However, in the same time, normally, if you want to know about this issue, you want to know how many percent of workers are covered by collective bargaining agreements, if there were any strikes, if there are any cases of discrimination against trade union leaders, and so on. So I do hope that the external assessment of the materiality analysis, which is provided in this new reporting standards, will contribute to the at least partial solution of this problem.
Now, what should compliance teams be doing to ensure that their organizations are reporting accurately? Are there any positive steps that they should be taking right now?
You know, I have a background in international labor law, and this is why I would underline some very important stuff which you might find in the European reporting standards. So in particular, in the two reporting standards devoted to S factors, there is such a standard as adequate wage. So actually companies should ensure that they are paying adequate wages and that in the value chains, adequate wages are paid to the workers. So the question arises, how we should determine adequate wage? And on this point, I think that the European reporting standards have contributed significantly because they refer to the international standard, which was recently also adopted in the EU Minimum Wage Directive, saying that the wage should be not less than 60% than the minimum medium country wage or 50% of the average wage. So I think this is the great point to really try to enhance the standards of wages, particularly when we speak about developing countries, and we all know that there are a huge number of multinationals which underpay their workers in the supply chain. So I think, I hope that, again, this seems like hopefully is the key word in this podcast. So I do hope that this reference to particular standards may somehow change for the better the working conditions of people in developing countries.
Let us hope. Well, Elena, thank you for sharing these insights with us on the EU Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.